This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson. We've heard it after many recent elections. The outcome would have been different if only African Americans, or millennials, or Latinos, or you name it, had showed up to the polls more. But those groups are showing up, more now than ever before. One study from UCLA found that Latino turnout nearly doubled from the 2014 midterms to the 2018 midterms. But voting's not the only way to be politically engaged. I mean, what if you can't vote, or you're not old enough, or you're not yet a U.S. citizen? Maybe you encourage others to vote in your place, or you lobby your local politicians so they know what you want. We discussed that when we visited Houston this month for an event at Talento Bilingüe de Houston, which is a bilingual theater. We spoke with Latinos about the issues that matter to them and how that might affect their vote. It's part of our project 1A Across America. We're spending time this year and next year in parts of the country that generally fall outside of the swing state category, and we're listening to a range of opinions from various communities representing all kinds of interests. So thanks to Houston Public Media, which is one of our six partner stations, for help with today's program. Our guests were Lena Hidalgo, who is the Harris County judge. Houston is in Harris County, the third largest county in the nation with more than 4.5 million people. And in Texas, a county judge is the highest ranking elected official. They deal with budgets and emergency management and lawmaking and some court functions. We also met immigration attorney Jacob Monti, who's a member of the Political Action Committee Hispanic Republicans of Texas, and he's a former advisor to the Trump campaign. Angelica Rasso is the Houston Area Coordinator for Mi Familia Vota, a nonpartisan organization that encourages civic engagement. And Jeronimo Cortina is an Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Houston and the Associate Director of its Center for Mexican American Studies. We started by asking them to share one thing that people think they know about Latino voters, but they really don't. One common misconception. Judge Hidalgo kicked us off.
So I think for Latino voters in general, but even, you know, perhaps young voters and others that don't vote to that same rate as other folks, there's this assumption, I think, that these communities are just apathetic, that's why they don't participate. And I've seen, and I think a lot of us saw, especially after the 2018 elections, that a lot of those communities and our Latino community has not chosen to be apathetic. They just haven't been welcomed in. There hasn't been an opportunity for them to see the direct relationship between their vote and policy, for them to have access to the vote and to participation. And now that we're beginning to see that and that those openings are beginning to appear, folks are excited and excited to participate. As an example, we had this record turnout. We did, after the election, an open transition process. We wanted to see if the community would stay involved after voting in record numbers. Would they then come out and participate in their government? And so we launched a 7-week-long program all across Harris County where we held these town halls asking people, okay, we're designing our policies for the next 4 years, largest county in Texas. What do you want to see? We didn't know. Sometimes you plan a party and nobody comes. We didn't know what would happen. We had anywhere from, 200 to 600 people show up, speaking all languages, a huge turnout of our Latino community. And that just showed to me, if we make those opportunities available, people will be there. And it's not apathy. It's just a lack of engagement in the part of government.
Jacob Monti, what about you? What's the one thing that you find people think they know about Latino voters, but they really don't?
Well, I'll speak to the Republicans out there that believe that Latinos should not care about immigration because they're legal. Why should they care about immigration? The problem I see is that if you're a Latino, even though you're able to work and live in the U.S., when you hear rhetoric against immigrants, you think, hey, they could be talking about me, or they could be talking about my family member who might be undocumented. So I think many Republicans, when they start bashing immigrants or talking bad about immigrants, they don't realize that it impacts legal Latinos who are turned off by that rhetoric and who might otherwise consider voting Republican. But when they hear that coming from Republicans, they either don't vote or they vote Democrat.
Angie?
Yeah, definitely. I think there's a narrative out there that we all vote the same and for the same reasons. I think that's dangerous because it takes away the stories of why people are voting, why they're getting engaged, why they want to see new leadership in elected positions. And it's And I think we're a diverse community amongst the Latino community. And I don't want this narrative to be continued that we're an easy catch, that we can be easily misinformed, or you just have to construe a story that's going to seem pretty to us, and that's good. That's what's going to get our vote out there. But that's not true. I think when you're following that rhetoric, then it means that candidates, elected officials, don't really want to take the time to get to know our community and understand why we want to be present and why we want our voices heard.
Professor?
Well, I think one of the misconceptions about the Latino vote is that it's a homogeneous bloc. That Latino is something that blocks, that votes en masse for a particular candidate. And that is wrong, because the Latino vote is more than that. The Latino vote, when you talk about the Latino vote, you have to think about that there's going to be at least four types of electorate, right? You're going to have people that are registered but do not vote, people that are registered and vote, and people that could be registered and are not registered, and obviously people that cannot be registered because of age or any other status issue. So when you're talking about these, what Judge Hidalgo was mentioning, is very important how political parties, at the beginning, not government officials, but how political parties engage Latino voters is going to be very, very important. Because perhaps part of this electorate, and when we talk about demographics, we're going to see that there's going to be a very important change, perhaps have not been politically socialized into the American political system that, by definition, is very, very different from what, quote-unquote, Latino voters may be used to.
Judge Hidalgo, let me talk to you for a second, particularly about becoming the county judge. What inspired you to run for county judge?
So I'm one of the hundreds of women across the country that had never thought I would run for office. And I was shocked at the divisiveness. It was mentioned earlier, the divisiveness we were seeing. I was taken aback by some of the attacks on our communities, on the press in particular. And I decided, you know, I know what issues my community is facing. I'd worked on with families of folks who had died in our county jail. I had worked throughout our public hospital system and seen what a lack of healthcare access in Texas can do. And I'd lived here, you know, seen what was by then 2 500-year floods in 2 years. This was before Harvey. So I figured, you know, someone needs to step up. We're getting to record divisiveness in this country. I'm grateful to my community and my country. I want to give back. So why not? Why not run? I stepped up. Turned out I was one of many, and one of many people who stepped up in different ways. For me, it was throwing my head in the ring and running for office. For other people, it was volunteering for the first time. It was voting for the first time. And here we are.
We're talking to Geronimo Cortina of the University of Houston, Harris County Judge Lena Hidalgo, Jacob Monti with Hispanic Republicans of Texas, and Angie Rosso, the Houston Area Coordinator for Mi Familia Vota. We'll have more in just a moment. I'm Joshua Johnson, and you're listening to 1A.
Support for this NPR podcast and the following message come from the United States Postal Service. Every day, innovative companies are reinventing the way business happens. But none of that is possible without the right people. People who get packages to over 150 million delivery points affordably and on time with the latest technology and expertise. Who can help you deliver the future of commerce? The United States Postal Service. See why they deliver more e-commerce packages to homes than anyone in the country at usps.com/future.
Hey, it's Ophira Eisenberg, host of NPR's Ask Me Another, and we're making the month of April all about women in comedy. We've got Greta Lee and Leslie Headland from the Netflix series Russian Doll, the beloved Retta from NBC's Parks and Recreation, and many more. Spread the word, listen, and subscribe now.
Let's continue our conversation about Latino voters in Texas. This was recorded in front of a live audience as part of our series 1A Across America. Angie, I wanted to ask you, you talk with potential voters all the time. Are there one or two main reasons that they tend to give most often for why they don't vote?
A lot of it is lack of information. They don't know when the election is coming up. They don't know the fact that we have an election more than every 4 years. They don't know where to go vote. There was a lot of confusing information on, well, during early voting, I can vote anywhere, but during on election day, I have to vote in my assigned location, and where do I find that out? And nobody sent me a card, nobody contacted me, you're the first person that's come by. So those conversations that we have on the field are just super important, because you get to understand, one, you get to hear people's story, so the issues they care about. So the ask is not, I need you to go out and vote, but it's, tell me about your life, tell me about the issues that are impacting you, and let me connect you with the proper information so then you can actually make sure your issues are being heard and are being addressed through an election, and then keeping your elected officials accountable. But it's lack of information, and it's also, I've never voted before, so why should I start now? So it's that initial step that people need to take of, well, I haven't voted before, I haven't voted in a really long time, why is this election important? Who are we voting for? It's just a really large gap in the knowledge that people have at the in the Latino community. So that's why Mi Familia Vota really seeks to engage our community, so we can, one, talk to them in their own language, and two, really meet them where they're at.
Jacob Monti, let me ask you what you find some of the biggest issues are for you and other members of the Hispanic Republicans of Texas. Are they dramatically different from what Hispanic Democrats in Texas are thinking about? Are they more similar? What do you see?
Well, the Republican Party is grappling with, how to do better with Hispanics. And if we don't start doing better with Hispanics, we're going to be a minority party. We know this is what happened in California. And, it seems simple to me. The rhetoric on immigration has to change. Not everyone, has gotten that message. Certainly the rhetoric from the president has not been helpful. We're as a party, we're struggling with how to do better with Hispanics when we have the president and others that have used bad rhetoric toward Latinos and immigrants. So it's a big issue. We can't get more of the Anglo vote. That much is clear. I mean, you can't win elections with 120% of the Anglo vote. And for me, as a Bush Republican, I look back when we were getting 45% of the Latino vote in 2004. It's possible, but again, the rhetoric was different. So we're doing some soul searching. Hopefully we can turn it around, because I'm a proud Republican. I believe in limited government, but I'm pro-immigrant. So some soul searching.
Josh, if I can just respond
sure,
to
Josh.
That. I think one thing that we saw between 2014 and 2018, these midterm elections here in Harris County, almost a doubling of the Latino vote. And that to me does remind me of California, in mid-90s, Prop 187, and it was attacking immigrants' right to access health care and basic necessities. And I think in a way, we're seeing that nationally, if not at least here in Harris County, where the rhetoric and the attacks are galvanizing the community to participate more than they had before, and to see what somebody brought up earlier, this connection between a vote and the policy.
Is Maria at the mic?
Hi.
Hi. What's on your mind?
Thank you. I'm a high school senior, and this is the first time I attend something like this. And up until a year ago, I started getting involved in activism and politics, and it all started after the shooting in Florida, and we had the March for Our Lives rally here in City Hall. And that was the first time where I actually felt that I needed to do something. So I left the classroom and I went with my friend. We took the metro and we were there at City Hall. And being there, I felt that I was doing something important. And ever since that day, something changed. And my passion for activism has grown even more. And honestly, I'm just very happy that there's an event like this in the East End, because I usually have to have my father drive me halfway across the town, and now it's here in my neighborhood. So thank you.
I'm glad we could make it easy for you to get here, Maria, because I'm glad that she speak up. Yeah, I appreciate you speaking up. All right, Benjamin, you are at the mic. Benjamin, what's on your mind?
Thanks. I was never involved in politics. In fact, I actively avoided getting involved in politics. That is until 2016, when I saw that the national dialogue was about my community without my voice. And what I mean by that, being a Latino immigrant, once undocumented public health professional. When I saw that happen, I just decided to quit my job, a C-level job, six-figure salary, to run for office. And although I didn't win this time, it led to me starting a program with the Houston Community College System to train young people to run for office. And so I was really excited to see Judge Hidalgo win, because that's what we need to see more of. So here's a question. What can we do to train the next generation of leaders? How can we be intentional about engaging young Latinos, not only to vote, but to run for office themselves? Because I think we need more of that as well.
Benjamin, before I let the panel answer, and Angie, I think you want to jump in, and Professor, you might want to jump in too. Can I just ask Benjamin what you've been doing, like what your organization does to try to foster that kind of engagement?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's taking, so I'll give you my example. I was a political science major at Rice, by some standards, a pretty good school, but I didn't learn when I wanted to run for office. I had to be like, okay, how do you do this, right? So the idea is teaching young people and saying, hey, as you go through your formal education process, here's also another path. You can run for office yourself. Here's how you do it. Here's how you file. Here's how you speak to the media. Here's how you run in a board meeting, conduct yourself, because these are all the skill sets that you'll need if you get elected, because that skill set isn't there, even in our formal systems of education. And what we saw with this program with the Houston Community College System, to our knowledge and the best that we could find, it's the first in its country that is done in partnership with a formal institution of education.
Professor Cortina, how would you answer Benjamin's question?
Well, I think, first of all, at the University of Houston, we have that class. So I'm sorry that Rice doesn't have it, but we have a political campaign class at the University of Houston. That's the first thing. The second thing is that we live in a democracy that is a political party democracy. So political parties are not doing their homework. They're not recruiting. They're not going into the communities and starting to form leaders. We saw in the 2018 election, I mean, it's if political parties recruit the right candidates, not the right candidate on paper, but the right candidate for the district or for the county wins. We saw George Hidalgo, great candidate in terms of preparation, in terms of studies, education, so on and so forth, but also the right candidate for the county. So that's one issue. The other issue is that if young voters do not understand that their vote has a significant implication in their daily lives, right? The government is present in our lives every single day. So anything that, or the person that is going to be elected is going to have a role in our lives, whether we like it or not. So it's very important to present the issues as, if this group of people, let's say Generation Xers, my generation, vote, frankly, I don't care right now about college tuition, right? My kids are not there yet, right? I'm not worried about that stuff. Young voters are. So my block, right, we're starting to think about Social Security. Am I going to be able to retire or not? We're starting to think about other issues that perhaps certain candidates are not going to represent. So if my group of people, my generation, go out and vote at higher numbers, right, my issues are going to be represented. And the question to young voters is, are your issues going to be represented or not? And it's your responsibility, right, to go out and vote. If not, you don't have, you know, really a saying on this situation. That's how democracy and that's how elections are won, by the number of people who go out and vote. Whoever has more people wins.
Winning by majority is not always the case on the national level, as we've seen twice in the last two decades. But will that happen again next year? Too soon to know. But we do know some of the issues this community cares about and what they want candidates to address on the campaign trail. You're listening to highlights from a 1A Across America event in Houston, our latest stop on our travels across the country. We'll have more to come in just a moment, including a quick tip on how not to eat a tamale. Stay close.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from ADT, America's trusted home security provider, providing secure smart homes custom designed with everything from video doorbells, indoor and outdoor cameras, smart locks and lights, and professionally monitored carbon monoxide and smoke detectors, all controlled by the sound of your voice or on the go with the ADT Go app. Learn more at ADT.com.
We're back with a new season of Rough Translation.
Yeah.
And this time, we are following people who break the rules.
I mean, lying is part of the business.
In my opinion, the best revenge against ISIS is to be humane.
Am I supposed to punch her?
Yeah.
New episodes every other Wednesday. Subscribe.
Back now to highlights of our conversation with members of the Latino community in Houston, part of our ongoing Project 1A Across America. We're spending time this year and next year in parts of the country that are often off the beaten campaign path. It's a chance to meet some great people and hear what's on their mind in the run-up to next year's election. I walked through the audience at one point in the event and asked everyone to name the top three things that a candidate must focus on to get their vote. Here's some of what was on their lists.
We need to focus on women's reproductive freedoms and also the importance of science, especially when it comes to climate change. I have gone through about 5 natural disasters in the last 8 years, and it's not sustainable for our society.
Reducing corruption, meeting your constituents, and increasing refugee admissions.
Continue the Hispanic record low unemployment, which will mean to focus on innovation and technology and preserving liberty in the United States.
Nonpartisan policies based on data, and make sure you have transparent financing for your campaigns.
Come talk to me, don't talk about me. Comprehensive immigration reform and criminal justice reform.
Education and just focusing on public education funding, gerrymandering, and number 3, overturning Citizens United.
Access to health care and affordable housing for communities like mine where the average income is $47,000 a year.
So clearly, the people in this audience are focused on issues that all communities focus on, as well as some that are especially pertinent to them. And that was our focus for the rest of our time with Harris County Judge Lena Hidalgo, immigration attorney Jacob Monti with Hispanic Republicans of Texas, Angie Rosso of Mi Familia Vota, and University of Houston political scientist Geronimo Cortina. As you might expect, immigration was a big focus. Here's one audience member who shared his story.
My name is Franklin. I'm 24. I, among the 700,000 plus Dreamers, grew up undocumented in this country and was privileged enough to acquire the Defer for Childhood Arrivals, also known as DACA, here in this country. And it wasn't until recently, about a couple of years ago, when you're sitting listening to the radio or watching television, and unlike any other experience, when you're hearing people talk about a particular issue, in this instance, the issue was me. People were talking about me. And I know for some people who become civically engaged and someone who cannot vote in this country, I knew I had to do something. And one of the things that I've realized as far as living here in Houston and in this community is that a lot of young people in even immigrant communities and Latino people in general aren't knowledgeable or informed about the issues in their communities or don't know the understand the resources available to them or the processes on how access and resources, voting, elections, and registering to vote. And it was kind of an eye-opener to me because there are these communities that exist but almost seem like they are forgotten. And my work as far as being DACA recipient and although I cannot vote, I try to encourage people to vote because I can't. And I do that because growing up in this community, I realized the importance of being stronger together and trying to communicate with your neighbors about the importance of facing tough issues in your community. And one last note as far as becoming civically engaged is essentially teaching people that people like me, immigrants, do care about their neighborhoods, do care about the country they live in, and do want to get involved. It's just a matter of fact whether, you know, you should give them the opportunity or not to.
Yeah, Franklin, thank you very much. Thank you very much for sharing your story. Angie, I'd love you to react to Franklin's story.
Yeah, I think the Dreamers of all ages here in this country, or particularly here in Texas, are an interesting group because they may not have voting power. They cannot vote, right? That's a clear fact. But they have political power. Very, very strong political power here in Texas. I'll give you an example. At the Texas legislative session is currently happening right now. Almost every single legislative session, there is a bill that is introduced to roll back in-state tuition for undocumented students that attend a public institution in the state of Texas. It never gets very far because pretty quickly after it's introduced, community groups like Mi Familia Vota across the state go to Austin and they advocate against it. Community members advocate against it. They're talking to their elected officials. Elected officials know that they will not be voted out by the undocumented population. They are voted out by the people that are loved by the undocumented population, by the dreamers, right? So, and it goes back to, why do we vote? We vote for the people we love. We vote based on our values. What is important to us? What are the issues that are impacting our realities? Even if I am a U.S. citizen and I look around me and who I consider part of my community, I want to make sure their voice is heard. That to me is very empowering as an individual, but for our community. So Franklin, thank you so much for sharing your testimony. I think it's a really good example of how other dreamers in Texas definitely view themselves. And I also want to make one additional comment. Talking about lowering barriers, when we pass laws that instill fear in our immigrant communities and our dreamers, then they don't want to stand up like Franklin and share their story and share their testimony and share why it's so important that we vote on their behalf. So we have to make sure that as a city and as a state, we're really making sure that we're passing policies that are not stifling their voices.
Jacob, I know you wanted to chime in.
Look, I think the biggest enemies against immigrants have been in the Republican Party. But yes, there are immigrants in the Democratic Party as well, because there was an opportunity to get DACA solved. And I do think that there was almost an issue of, let's save immigration and DACA for the 2020 election. I think the DACA community needs to hold both parties accountable, especially now that the Democrats control the House. And, you know, immigration is, it's too important to be political, and at least the DACA issue should be both parties need to be held accountable for it.
We got time for a few more comments. Let's get to Karina on the mic. Hi, Karina. What's on your mind?
My name is Karina from the University of Houston. I think one of the main issues in the Latino community is that we are misinformed and we don't do enough research on our own. My mom is really hard on, you know, being pro-life. And before, you know, she can't vote, but she would ask me to vote Democrat, because that's what Latinos, for the most part, stand for when it comes to illegal immigration and other issues. But what she didn't know is that Democrats usually stand on the side for abortion, and especially with these bills in New York coming up, you know, they're very broad and open for interpretation. I think where most of Latinos are pro-life, we do see life as very sacred. So where should the Hispanic community stand on this issue, and how do we inform others about where we stand?
Karina, that's a good question. I'd love Jacob and the professor to answer that, because Jacob, before the program, I think you told one of our producers that based on core values, that more Latinos should end up being Republicans. But
Yes, I agree that, you know, when it comes to distrust of government, family values, being against abortion, being in favor of free enterprise, I think, you know, Latinos would line up Republican, but for the toxic rhetoric on immigrants that repels Latinos away from the party. So, I mean, I agree, Karina, that, you know, a lot of Latinos are called for different issues. Unfortunately, the dog whistle on immigration tends to drown out other issues that could be attractors to the party. But a lot of times all we hear is the dog whistle, which is, you know, we're not welcomed in the party and we're not wanted. So, yeah, but I agree that there are other attractions. Unfortunately, we don't hear about them.
I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, Jacob, because in Donald Trump's campaign announcement speech, he said that Mexico is sending crime, drugs, rapists, and some, I assume, are good people. That was his opening salvo to the nation as to why he should be president. And he's engaged in a lot of very nativist, racist, nationalist rhetoric from the minute that he became a candidate, and hasn't really paused. How do you, as a Republican working here on the ground with a community that, you know, we all know the Republican Party needs, how do you work around that? There are so many Latinos, African Americans, you know, LGBT people who will look at Donald Trump and say, as long as he's in your party, count me out. How do you work around that?
Look, that's the problem. And I was on his campaign for about 3 weeks, and he wasn't my first choice, but I thought, look, I want a Republican to win. I was able to overlook that opening speech that he made at Trump Tower, and I had two meetings with him. The meetings were great. He sat down and said, "I want immigration reform. We're going to bring people out of the shadows." I was on board until he went to Phoenix and announced his immigration plan that called for deporting the Dreamers and mass deportations. That's when I resigned the next day and publicly denounced him. And so, look, it is a challenge. What I do as a Republican right now is I agree with him when he does something I agree with, which is mainly deals with the economy. When he does something bad on tariffs or on immigration, I don't sit quietly. And other Republicans are likewise disagreeing with him, not as much as I would like, but it is a tough situation because he's the leader of the party. You know, we shouldn't go along with him just because he's the president. If he's wrong, doesn't mean you're a bad Republican to disagree with the president. I mean, this is America. You can still do that.
Professor Cortina, what about issues like abortion in terms of the larger palette of issues that Latino voters tend to be most engaged on?
Well, it's why I think, I mean, that illustrates why political parties perhaps don't know how to talk to Latinos, right? And I'll give an example. They may be, you know, conservative on certain social issues, right? Like abortion, for instance. But Latinos tend to be more liberal, for example, on issues about education, on issues about health policy, on issues about the economy, so on and so forth. So when it comes to that, it becomes perhaps, you know, bread and butter issues, right? Social issues may be extremely important, but when it comes, well, can I send my kid to college or not? Well, these guys tell me that I can, but the other party's telling me, no, you can't. So how my vote is going to be decisive in that case. And the other part is that, you know, political parties do not necessarily know, as a institution, know how to talk to Latino voters. You know, you have the President Ford's, right, when he tried to eat a tamal, right, here in Texas when he was campaigning, he ate the tamal with a husk, right? And then on the other hand, right, you have...
Just for those who are listening who have never eaten a tamale, you're not supposed to.
You have
to
right, yeah. Right. It's impossible, right?
For those of you playing the home game, don't do that.
Right. You cannot do it.
Right, right.
And then you have President Bush, right, W. Bush, that knows how to talk to Latino voters, and that's why he got 40-something percent of the Latino vote.
All right. Alexander is at the mic. Alexander, what's on your mind?
Hello. Thank you, panelists. Thank you, Joshua. My question is about how do you feel about the double standard of candidates of color having to prove that they are authentically in tune with their culture? And I bring this up especially because for a candidate like Julian Castro, who is currently the only Latino candidate, there have been questions or concerns raised about the fact that he doesn't speak fluent Spanish. Like for a candidate like Beto O'Rourke, who is white, his ability to speak fluent Spanish is seen as a boon and a positive to him. And there's no question about him having to prove his commitment to a white community.
Good question, Alexander. Judge Hidalgo, would you answer that, and then I'll come to the professor?
Yeah, I think it's a fascinating question. It's not easy running for office. And I can say just as a first-time candidate, and I do think if you just look at a representation, clearly there's some barrier keeping diverse candidates from running and from winning. And part of the movement, I think, that started in 2018 with more people participating is this movement of encouraging folks to run and supporting that and nurturing that. And I think we need to continue doing that. I think that to the extent that it's about normalizing it as well, to the extent that we nurture new entrants, and these are diverse candidates that represent all kinds of communities, we will change the discourse and the culture around what we expect a candidate to look like or to do and not do. And I'll say for myself, you know, starting out, it was some groups that helped. You know, there's a Run for Something, a group that helps young candidates run for office. The Arena helps new candidates run for office. New training, staff support. We need to build that as part of our civic infrastructure just as much as we need to improve access to voting, just as much as we need to be inside the schools, just as much as we need to recognize that no community is defined by a single issue, but that it really comes with who each person is.
Professor?
We know that voters are sophisticated voters. regardless of their race and ethnicity. Like, for example, if you don't go very far, if you go to the 29th congressional district that was represented by Congressman Jim Green, non-Hispanic, white, he won, and he won every single re-election until he retired. Why? Because he was serving his constituency. He was actually serving his constituency in such a way that the constituency says, well, you perhaps do not represent me, descriptively speaking, right? But in substance, in terms of the issues that I care, you're doing a great job. And we also see it in, you know, we had this discussion the first time that President Obama ran, Latinos are not going to vote for a African-American candidate. And that was not true. Because during his campaign, President Obama was able to communicate, right, the issues that substantively affect the Latino community, and therefore they voted. And the other way around, African Americans vote for Latino candidates, so on and so forth. So I think that, you know, the litmus test for candidates, and basically once they get elected, as Judge Hidalgo is saying, and this is, you know, very refreshing to hear from an elected official, is that we have to do our job in terms of representing the constituency and giving them what is important, and have these two-way street of communicating with the base, right? And say, what do you want? What do you need? What we can do? Let's sit down at the table and construct this more of a community policy-making decision rather than from the top down.
Those were University of Houston political scientist Jeronimo Cortina, who is also the associate director of its Center for Mexican American Studies, Harris County Judge Lena Hidalgo, immigration attorney Jacob Monti with Hispanic Republicans of Texas and also a former Trump campaign advisor, and Angie Rosso, the Houston area coordinator for Mi Familia Vota. This show was produced by Amanda Williams in collaboration with Houston Public Media's Elizabeth Troval and edited by Miranda Fulmore. Special thanks to everybody at Houston Public Media and to 1A's James Morrison and Bianca Martin, and also to the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, whose grant funds the Across America collaboration. If you want to watch the full event, you can find it online and catch up with all of our Across America coverage at the1a.org. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. Until we meet again, I'm Joshua Johnson. Thank you so much for listening. This is 1A.